This is the What Matters Most podcast. A 100% listener-supported program. And now, here is your host, Paul Samuel Dolman.
Welcome back, you beautiful people all over the world, to What Matters Most. It's a privilege to sit in this seat and talk to these incredible guests who come on the show and share their hearts and souls, and then to hear from you. I love the notes, the affirmations. Thank you to the Patreons who support the show, to Matthew Wayne Selznick, the technical director, and all the publicists and producers who contribute to the show to find us good people. I am just very inspired to be a part of it. And today, especially because it's a topic very close to my heart. And I love the book that I'm holding. It's called Threads of Yoga, Themes, Reflections, and Meditations to Weave into Your Practice, a guide for students and teachers inspired by the Yoga Sutras. This is way up my alley. It's an honor to finally welcome to the family the beautiful teacher and author, Pamela Selig. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, hi, Paul. Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
I love the book, and we'll get into it in a bit. I wanted to ask you, how have you done over the last 18 months with COVID? How has it affected you?
Well, I have done okay. I mean, like everybody, more home time than usual, which has been interesting. I had one friend who did pass, which was very sad. But, you know, we're all just, you know, moving through trying to be healthy, trying to live as healthy a life as we can. You know, hopefully we'll all get through this, you know, and be changed in a positive way. If that's possible, get the good out of it.
How did the yoga practice and the different things you've been learning over the last decade or more help you cope with this situation?
The essence of yoga is really finding that deeper place within yourself. And that helps in so many ways. But when there's the real storm on the outside, like a COVID, like a pandemic, or even the minor things in all of our lives, always knowing that that's there, even if it may not be accessible in that moment, just knowing that that peaceful place exists can really help move through some of the more challenging times.
So how did a type A super achiever become such a calm-centered yogini?
Well, I think a lot of people have this story. It's way back, I guess, in the 80s. I was working on Wall Street and, had that kind of path. I would say not very balanced at all, but, running full speed probably for me in the wrong direction. Not that that's not the direction for some people, but for me, it was the wrong direction. And I eventually took a toll on my body. I had some health issues. And then one day I found myself, I had Bell's palsy, which I'd never heard of, but it's quite dramatic. Half of your face is paralyzed and it happens suddenly. And, going to the emergency room, I found that, this is not life-threatening, which was a relief. But it would take a while, at least 3 months to recover. And some people don't recover at all. So it kind of stopped me in my tracks. And then sort of the journey began. I went to many doctors and one doctor told me to maybe look at alternative medicine, which I had never heard of, or meditation, he said. And I thought that was a little wacko, but I was desperate. And I began meditating. I just skimmed a couple books. I didn't know too much about it, and really liked it. Really helped. Again, I kind of dove in. I didn't have balance in this area either. I just, meditated for hours right from the start. I didn't know at that time you should take it a little, in stages. So I had some experiences that really I wanted to understand more what they meant, and I just saw firsthand there's more happening here than the 5-sensory experience. And I became fascinated. And looking back now, I see that really changed the direction of my life. So that's really what got me onto this path.
When you were sitting in those meditations, did you have a deep sense of sort of coming home to yourself?
Yes, at first I was more, seeing this peace for the first time, it was almost scary trying to, tap into. And I was in a state too with what was happening in my life with my face, and I was trying to escape a little bit. Again, not probably the most healthy way to, go into meditation as this escape mechanism. But anyway, that was my journey. So it was curiosity. I did come across this sense of peace, but at first it was more like just seeing, kind of behind my eyelids, light, like light shows and things, and not understanding what it was, thinking in a way it was a physical problem that I had. So I was, again, seeing doctors. So it was more this fascination of what's going on and why have I not heard about this before? I'm a normal person. What's going on? Why can't I get any answers? And so it was, I didn't get that deep sense of peace and coming home till a little bit later.
Meditation has totally changed my life over the years. I mean, I can't think of anything that's been more profound. Why do you feel mindfulness practice is so important and transformative? And why is sitting, literally, if you do it to any level, to any degree, any length of time on a consistent basis, it will increase your joy, your happiness, your presence. It works. Why is that, just sitting in a chair and being still? Why does it have those effects? Is it a mystery? We've had scientists on, changes your brain, your body. But I feel like there's a mysterious, magical, metaphysical element beyond that.
I agree. And when I came across this ancient text, it's called the Yoga Sutras by Patanjali, written about 2,500 years ago. He talks about this and he's very succinct. It's these 196 little statements. And in the second one, he says, yoga is the quieting of the mind. So he defines yoga. And then the third sutra, and this is, what you're asking, I think, he says why we meditate. And he writes, and then the seer abides in her true nature, or his true nature. I mean, to me, that's when we quiet the mind, we abide in our true nature. So many people, myself included, I didn't even know, like, you should even try to quiet your mind. Like, I'm, my whole life we're trying to kind of increase our mental activity, our knowledge. Like, the idea of quieting the mind, first of all, that hung me up for a while. Like, wait, what? You have to quiet your mind? Like, how do you possibly do that? And of course, Patanjali goes on and talks about all the different ways. We're all unique. There's many different ways. But when you do that, you abide in your true nature. And now we're hearing a lot in our modern kind of nomenclature, be yourself, you be you, be authentic. And that's terrific. Like, that's beautiful. But how do we do that? Like, how do you know who you are? And the ancient texts tell us by quieting the mind, you can know who you are. You can abide in your true nature. And when you do this, everything changes, like you say. It's like your life is directed from this deeper place. That's one thing. But the other thing, I think the most beautiful thing is what you see is, when you get deep enough, you see this and you feel this connection to all that is, including to each other, to the world, to the planet. You know, when we're in our physical bodies and we're looking outward, our senses take us outward, we see the physical world and it's beautiful and amazing. But you feel very isolated, almost separate. We're separate. We look out at everything else. When you abide in your true nature, or whatever words you use in that, you realize that we're all experiencing this awareness, that we're all in the same awareness, like it's all one. And it's, again, you cannot describe this in words. It's like describing chocolate. You can say rich, sweet, creamy, but you just have to taste it. You know, it doesn't, it, when you're in that, and it just changes everything. So I just feel like, wow, everyone should know this. Everyone should be practicing meditation. You don't have to change your life. You don't have to do any, but when you practice meditation, which I'm not saying is easy, it really does change everything for you, you know, each person individually.
Why does the mind fight it? And then once my mind is in it, it loves it, doesn't want to leave. And you would think, oh, well, then tomorrow would be easy. But then it seems like it's Groundhog Day. It doesn't want to meditate again. Then it goes in, it loves it, and repeat.
I know. I feel that way with exercise sometimes. I should do this every day. Workout feels really good. But yes, our deeper self knows these things are good for us. But it's the monkey mind. The yogis have a great saying, the mind is a wonderful servant, but a terrible master. So we've all put the mind in charge, and it's just a misunderstanding. It's called avidya in Sanskrit. It's spiritual ignorance, but not in a negative way. It's just a misunderstanding. We think this inner thought stream, this narrator in our head, it's at the forefront, and we just don't know otherwise, because when we're very young, we're ourselves, we do our thing, and then someone tells us, no, don't do that. You know, for our safety, don't go in the road, don't run across the street, or you know. So that takes us a little away from ourselves. So we that voice becomes our voice in a way. We are telling ourselves, don't go across the street, talk to that person. They may try to make them think you're a good person. You know, it just grows, these ideas, and we think we need it. We think we actually need the voice, our narrator. It kind of keeps us company, holds our personality, our judgments. We should use it to plan things. It's again, it's not bad. It's just, it shouldn't be in charge. And when you quiet your mind, when you have a meditation practice, it lessens. It begins to lessen the voice. When it gets a little crazy in your life, all of a sudden you see it and you say, you just take a couple breaths, quiet it down, connect with this presence within, which actually feels like you don't need the voice anymore, because it's not like you're alone. You feel this presence and you get a little more control of your life. But it's a slow practice. It's not like one day, boom, the voice is going to be gone or you're going to have no thoughts. It's a very incremental, gradual, beautiful process. So there's no end game, really.
Well, you're training the mind, and then also you're creating neural networks that make it easier, pathways that will bring more peace rather than stress and anxiety. There's something deeply powerful about yoga. I'd love for you to just define it, because some people probably have no idea what it is. And of course, there's many definitions, but I've seen it just change countless lives around me. How it, if somebody just said to you, what's yoga? Because I know born again evangelicals who thinks it's some sort of satanic practice. Of course, they're scared of everything, the poor things. What is yoga?
Yes. Actually the word, yes, yoke. That's our word. Yoke comes from the root of yug, which is where yoga comes from. So it's that idea of bringing together so many different definitions. I like to go back to these texts, one of the foundational texts of yoga, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. So he says, yoga is the quieting of the mind. And then the seer abides in their true nature. Okay. And then he describes how to quiet the mind. And it's called the eight-limbed path. He has eight limbs. This is Raja Yoga, eight limbs. So one of the limbs is asana or postures. And that's the gateway for many people. It's the first time they're active, doing postures and quieting the mind at the same time. It's a very powerful practice. Then it helps to bring this practice of quieting the mind while you're moving into your life. But that's just one of the eight limbs. Western society has really grabbed onto that one. two of the limbs are these ethical precepts, things like nonviolence, practicing contentment. One of the, they're called yamas and niyamas, these ethical precepts. One of them is the study of sacred texts. So if you are a religious person, this is actually doing yoga, Bible study, studying different texts with the heartfelt desire to know yourself is doing yoga. So sorry if you don't like yoga, you're probably doing it. Anyway, two of the limbs are different aspects of meditation. And then three, if you include samadhi. And another limb, the last one, is breath work, pranayama. So yoga is the practice of quieting the mind through these different suggested ways. There's no one way. There's nothing, there's not any dogma here, a belief system. It's here's the roadmap. If you want to quiet the mind, I know it's challenging. The mind's powerful. Here are some ways to do it and techniques. So that's yoga. It's the journey of quieting the mind. Now, the state of yoga is that state of union that it's called samadhi or these higher kind of metaphysical, mystical states. Yes, that occurs, but it's not that we have to think of that as we're practicing. We're just practicing presence, being in the moment with not worrying about the fruits of our actions. And that will actually help us to dissolve the mind, the ego, these things, and experience these altered states. It happens, but again, it's about the journey and learning and living our lives.
What inspired you to then go out and create this book and to share all this?
I guess over the past 30 years, so many times I've been reading a book and like almost thrown it and been like, ah, everyone should know this. Or I wish I knew this when I was younger. Again, that's intellectual information. You then have to integrate it. But that idea just makes me, you know, made writing the book so much fun. But it was really when I began teaching yoga about 15 years ago, teaching physical yoga classes, which I love. I was always trying to like bring in the philosophy, the deeper wisdom about meditation, present moment awareness, things like that. And it was hard. It was kind of awkward. I was always looking for a book that would help me. And after a couple of years of, you know, the perpetual search, I decided, you know, maybe I can write that book. And so I wrote it initially for teachers, but as I was writing it, I could feel the audience like expanding. So many students ask, you know, where can I learn more about this? Or, you know, what's really yoga about? Like the big picture. So I wanted students who like to go to class, but maybe want to get a little deeper than what can typically be taught in a 60-minute class. This book is good. And also, I have a lot of friends who have no interest in the physical postures. They like to run or go to the gym, or maybe they're not interested in the physical practice, but wonder like, what is the fuss about yoga? Like, what is this 3,000-year-old practice? Why is it still a thing? So I think this information honestly could help everyone, but that was the writing kind of process for teachers, but then it expanded.
We've talked a little bit about it. Will you talk a little bit about the observer and the timeless eternal presence that's in all of us?
Yes. Yeah. This is called the observer, like you say. There's other words, the witness, the seer, consciousness, spirit. Doesn't matter what word you choose, but when we meditate, we come in contact with this part of ourselves. And this is when we go kind of beyond or behind the thoughts. You can experience the witness even when you're in thought. Can't always stop the thoughts for sure. But it's the part of us that is observing the thoughts. It's the part of us that observes everything. It's the part of us that has been there when we were 3 years old. That same part of us, maybe when we look in the mirror and we're much older and we say, gosh, I still feel like I'm that three-year-old. There's that part of you that's still, it's the eternal part of us. And in this world, in this realm that we're in, everything changes. Everything starts, has a middle, and has an end. Even a thought has a start, a middle, and an end. Physical things start, middle, end, even long term. So everything, except for what the yogis call what is real. Real things don't have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And this part of ourselves is the real part. It's just the word real. That's the part. And it's not of this realm, because it doesn't have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And so that's the witness. That's the sort. That's what we all need to tap into. Even just a glimpse will be transformative. And I think in these times, yogis think that, you know, time isn't linear, it's cyclical. We're entering another cycle where there's more access to this. This is in our culture more. Meditation is now being researched by the scientific community. Who would think that 30 years ago? So not too long ago, but we all are awakening. It's starting. And this is becoming more accessible. So there's hope. You know, the world's chaotic, but there's hope.
How does one get in touch with that aspect, the listener? How can they move closer to that?
This is the practice. We're all unique. There's not one way. And that's a great thing. We have, because it's fun to find like what works for you. What is your path? The overall general idea is, yes, we have to quiet the mind. But how you do that is your journey. Fortunately, there have been teachers, enlightened beings, sages, saints, avatars who have come before us and given us the best advice, tips, tricks, and tools. So we're silly not to use those. One of the first ways, the easiest way to tap in across the board, I think, is with the breath. We can all focus on our breath. And when we do that, you immediately create this mind-body connection. When we bring our attention to our breath, just feeling the breath in the nose, feeling it as it moves in and as it flows out, feeling the sensation of the airflow. It's a little cooler on the way in, a little warmer on the way out, relaxed body. When we do that, we immediately come out of the mental thoughts. We come out of that thought stream and we're in the body. And when we have that mind-body connection, we then have access to the spirit, the source, that other aspect, the deeper part of ourselves. We get the mind-body spirit, but we have to come out of the thought stream. So one way is through the breath. And then there's other ways through mantra, but it's that meditation. We do have to turn our senses away from the external world, all five senses, focus outward. We have to turn that around and focus them inward. And through that practice, we'll tap into these deeper parts of ourselves. And the purpose is when we do that, we then share ourselves, more of our authentic selves, with the world. There's more than just, you know, this idea of going self, thinking about the self. I've heard people think it's a little, or feel it might be a little narcissistic or self-centered. No, because when we do this, we bring more of ourselves. We offer more of ourselves to the world. This is a beautiful thing. This is, you know, I think our purpose. When we all seek purpose, I think finding who we are and then sharing that. And that doesn't have to be running the Red Cross. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It can be thinking, I am going to call my neighbor. I just am feeling like I should call my neighbor. When we tap into these deeper parts of ourselves, we know what to do. And life becomes the magic carpet ride.
And we live in a culture that's so obsessed with doing and action and achievement and accumulation. And yet I find that shifting to a primary state of just being is so much more one of connection and frankly, more joy and resonant. Haven't you also had that experience?
Absolutely. the mind, which likes to be in charge, our culture and the media really know, like with precision, laser focus, how to catch the mind, how to attract the mind. You need this. This will make you happy. Yeah. And the mind loves it. You know, it's like a shiny object. Ooh, or like a squirrel, you know. So I love the world. I'm not, you know, the world's a great place, but we have to understand that the mind is always looking for these things, and especially advertising. You know, this is a precision, you know, to capture the mind and make you think what you want or what you need. And, you know, just knowing that, you know, diminishes the power, the control. We're all culturally conditioned. But when you increase your awareness, when you bring more awareness in, you just see things for what it is. You see what you need and what you don't need, and what you love and what you don't love. And you kind of see more clearly the emptiness that some of these culturally conditioned items that you think you might need really do have, the emptiness that they bring, if they're just not as appealing.
Yeah, it's like eating steam for dinner. It's not going to be very filling.
Right, right. And the mind is like never satisfied anyway. So you want something, you get it, you're good for maybe 2 seconds, and then you want something, you know, the bigger thing or the next thing. It's again, the world is great. It's fun to, you know, enjoy things of the world for sure. But knowing that that's not really going to be a deep, fulfilling experience. There's other ways that you can turn your attention that will just be more meaningful and, you know, make life more joyful.
How do you balance those two polarities?
I think that's the practice. I think that's, you know, the exploration, and it's not a straight line. I think you move in a direction, and then you're like, you know, you kind of fall back a little bit and say, you know, I like this old way of doing things. This was fun. You know, I'm going to do it again. And then you do it and you're like, okay, that was fun. And that just slowly happens. And you gravitate more toward things that you love, that make you feel good in a deeper way. And, you know, no, I don't think we need to judge. I don't think we need to, you know, give ourselves goals that are just not reachable. You know, whatever we're trying to achieve, you know, we're who we are. It's really about just letting go of all these, you know, ideas and the thoughts that kind of keep us boxed in. We're already good, and there's nothing to do. And if we just relax and see that, it's, you know, just give ourselves a little bit of a break. You know, we're just trying so hard all the time. It's just, I think we can just take a breath, relax, we're good, and enjoy that.
And I'm not against action. I just try to gear mine so it's coming from the heart-based approach rather than a constant mind stream. I find that if it's heart originated and then the mind carries out the command, it works better than if the mind originates it and then we drag the heart along.
I also like action. I like yoga practice that is vigorous sometimes. There's a one of the yamas and niyamas I spoke about, part of the eight-limbed path. It's called tapas, and it's translated as sort of like spiritual austerities. And what it is the practice of bringing heat, or like going to your edge. And you can do that in different ways, like maybe fasting, where you're feeling like you, and again, I'm not promoting fasting, but it's this idea that sometimes you may, from a deep place, feel that, you know, you're going to skip a meal because you're, for some deeper spiritual reason, it just, you're feeling that. And it feels almost like it feels like a positive, like you're growing from it. And then tapas is also when we have challenges in our life that inevitably come. We're not trying to get out of the suffering of life. We're just not trying to add to it unnecessarily. suffering is part of the journey. It's a messenger. We don't wish it on anyone. We don't want to be in extra stuff. But there are, when you look back, that's probably what really kind of honed your character. So these things are all part of the journey. And so we don't have anything to do, and yet life will naturally flow through us.
So Pamela, how does the listener get started? What's the first gentle steps to ease in? They don't have to go take an intensive or teach training or fast or sit for 19 hours. how do they take those first steps just so they can like take a tasting and see if it resonates?
I think thankfully now, especially with technology, there's ways to begin a meditation practice in a lot of different ways. There are, you know, teachers, it's nice to start with a little course, but you don't have to. You can read a book, you can look online, there's apps now, but really it's setting some time and to start maybe 5 to 7 minutes to sit and quiet those thoughts. There's many ways to do it. Put the intention out there for yourself that you're going to do it. And something will come up for you, what you should do. And then follow that idea. But it's really sitting, starting with 5 to 7 minutes per day. And then you'll want to add, you'll want to go to 10 minutes. You'll want to go to the next, but take your time. Best time is usually the morning. But when you read about it, when you take a course, the details, you'll find the details, but really it's just about quieting the mind and making a space in your life to quiet the mind.
Well, I've enjoyed your visit here. We'll have to have you back. And you just bring a calm presence to the show, and I can just feel you putting the good energy out into the world.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'd love to come back.
Will you talk to the people out there, anybody, maybe just one person who might be struggling right now? It's been a tough couple of years. Global pandemic, and there's climate change, the rise of fascism. I mean, it's hard to be a human being. I haven't made, and I find it hard. So what inspiring words, like if you were sitting with a student right now and you were a meditation teacher or just a friend, what would you say to them?
Well, yeah, I think we all go through storms. And it is a chaotic world right now. But just know that in a deep part of yourself, the part of yourself that doesn't change, that there's a deep peace and we're all connected. And even though storm is at the surface, we can all tap into that deep peace within us. And I do feel that there is hope. I think things get worse right before they get better. And I think that within us all, I think things are going to get better, that we have to add to that, that we have to keep that peace within us and kind of anchor it for the all.
You've been listening to the What Matters Most podcast, a 100% listener-supported program. If you feel inspired, please go to our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/whatmattersmost and join our family. So until the next time, stay inspired and in the light.